Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Willard today. It's Dibs and Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs. And today is our Thanksgiving blowout. Every hour we're giving away prizes. We got another prize coming up later on this hour. It is AC/DC tickets at Levi's Stadium on August 5th. So if you want to grab those tickets, make sure you keep listening. Wait for the air horn, and that's your cue to call and try to win those tickets. But right now here on Willard and Dibs with Dibs and Grandy, it is Greg Cosell, the great Greg Cosell of NFL Films, joining us as he does every week here on Willard and Dibs. Greg, it's Mark Grandy in for Mark Willard, along with Dan Dibley, as always. Happy early Thanksgiving. How you doing, Greg?
Well, I think for those about to rock, we salute you.
I was going to ask you about your love for AC/DC. I know you're a classic rocker, and AC/DC is certainly among them. The Bon Scott era, you and I go back far enough to remember, and then Brian Johnson stepped in, maybe one of the great backup quarterbacks in classic rock history.
Yes, indeed. Music was great. I mean, I'm a big fan of, you know, all that, the blues rock sound from the 70s. That's the I still listen to that. You know, I probably shouldn't tell you guys this or the people listening, but I never ever listen to anybody ever talking to me in my car. I just listen to music, you know. So I can hear the same song 1,000 times, and if I like it, I'm fine with it.
And it's fantastic. Early for me with older brothers and an older sister, it was all early AC/DC, Highway to Hell, and then Back in Black came out, and you didn't want to love it because Bon was gone, but rock lives on. And then, wow, Greg, that album, as far as a first album with a new lead singer, that's got to be up there on the short list for you.
I'm sure it is. Yeah, I can't remember every song on it, you know, because I listen to Sirius, so I hear the songs they play, but I can't remember every song. But that was a great album, a great album.
Yeah, opening with Hell's Bells, just the tone of the bells. It's like a Kyle Shanahan 15-play scripted drive, am I right?
Yeah, I probably see those things a little differently, but okay, that's all right.
Oh, if you want to win tickets, Greg, just keep listening and give us a call coming up when you hear the air horn. But let's talk about this Niner game on Monday Night Football against the Panthers, a 20-9 win. As I'm sure you would have guessed, the major topic is Brock Purdy and his interceptions. Three of them. I wonder if you could give us your synopsis, what you saw on film from Brock Purdy as a whole, but specifically those three interceptions.
Well, I would say this in general, based on just Purdy since he came back. He's played two games, correct?
Correct.
Yep. Since he came back. I mean, I would say right now he's not playing with the same high level of post-snap processing and anticipation. Those two things work together that we have seen define his game in the past. You know, because Purdy's always been an elite post-snap processor, and that leads to outstanding anticipatory throws. That's been really who he is, because he doesn't have a big arm. So I would say that, those things have been, you know, he's been a beat late. Like, for instance, that interception, the first one to Horn, He was a beat late on the dig ball to Jennings to start that second possession. And he left the ball a little too far outside. A Horn recovered and made the interception. So it was the right decision and just a late throw. And he certainly can't be late on dig balls. He doesn't have the natural arm strength to compensate. The second one was a little more interesting to me as to, you know, what exactly happened. I almost feel like I would need to know from Brock Purdy, you know, what his thoughts are.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the play, the throw ended up being late and short and too far inside. But Purdy on that play initially looked to his left. Now, based on the coverage, to me, and again, you never know how a guy's coached based on a route concept and combination. But to me, based on how the defense reacted, I thought that the throw was to Pearsall. But he looked left, and then the pressure forced him to climb the pocket and then look to Pearsall. So it ended up being late. But you can argue it wasn't the wrong read, but he got to it really late and the throw was not accurate. I don't know if he would have gotten to Pearsall within structure if there was no pressure, but he obviously was late. The third interception was just you couldn't blame him at all. I mean, that was just an unbelievable play by Horn. There's no way any quarterback would have seen Horn. Just no way. He came from the other side of the field. No one controlled him with a route. So he just, that's why Horn's Horn. You know, I mean, that was just a great play.
Is that one that you would chalk up perhaps to the design? I know you don't want to criticize Shanahan and what he does because you're not in the room, but you had nobody on that side of the field to occupy Horn to the boundary side.
Yeah, I can only tell you what happened. I mean, they were a 1x3 nub set off the motion by Robinson, and they ran all go to the trip side, and there was no backside boundary route that controlled Horn. Now, 99% of the corners in the league would not fly over the way Horn did. So you have to give Horn credit. But, yeah, there's no question that there was no backside route that controlled Horn. So he just, as a really smart, aware, savvy player, he rotated hard inside, cutting in front of the dig by Pearsall. But there was no way Purdy could have accounted for him.
So the first two interceptions, Greg, and Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us here on Willard and Dibbs. The first two interceptions, Greg, you seem to be in lockstep with what Kyle Shanahan said postgame, which was essentially not, you know, bad decisions, just seeing it late. And then maybe not executing the throw perfectly either. I'm curious what you think in your experience the fix is or the cause is for something like that for a quarterback. Is it just at times it happens as simple as a bad day? Could it possibly be related to something physically in your experience? What would you say is potentially the reason for that kind of thing from a guy who generally is good at that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, you know, I'm not there every day, but, you know, what Purdy as a post-snap operator with unbelievable anticipation, that's what he was for his first, this is his fourth year, right? Fourth year in the league?
Yes.
Yeah. He's been great at that. That's been his game. So on those particular plays, he was not. I don't view that as, oh my God, there's a big problem. You know, it's a second game back. He's probably still maybe getting his feet wet. There was a little bit of pressure on the first one, and maybe he, you know, reacted to it and he didn't need to. But, you know, I don't think there's a red flag here. You know, there's a large sample size of him being really, really good as an elite post-snap operator. So, you know, those two were, he didn't handle real well. All you have now is the next game. And by the way, the next game is a difficult game because I've talked to a lot of offensive coaches in the league who think that Jim Schwartz is as difficult a defensive coordinator to play against as any in the league. And I know when they played a couple of years ago, that was a game they lost on the missed field goal late in the game. And if he made it, they would have won the game. But, you know, I remember Schwartz did a really good job of understanding all those inbreakers that are a staple of the Kyle Shanahan offense, and did a really good job taking those away with what he did on the back end with some disguise and late rotation. And you're likely to see those kinds of things again. Now, Kyle Shanahan will know this too. So this game to me sets up as a great chess match.
Yeah. And the last time the Niners won in Cleveland, Greg, you and I both had much longer hair and we were rocking out to AC/DC in real time, 1984, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. So were we in the era of the big hair bands at that point?
I think we were. Yeah. I mean,
Getting there? Were we getting there with the power ballads? Were we getting there?
I think we were still pre-Poison, and I don't think Whitesnake hadn't reared its ugly head
too
yet.
Early, yeah.
Yeah, we're getting
a little too early.
Yeah, we were still post-Kiss and pre-Poison, and you know,
this was probably more like the Journey, Farner, Styx stage, right?
Yeah, it sounds about right. Maybe a sprinkle of late Bad Company as well, as Greg and I talk classic rock from the 80s. Oh, yeah. I mean, you're bringing me back to my youth. I want to ask you about the Bryce Young interceptions, because 2 weeks ago, God, he was just spectacular. And then he came out here and kind of laid an egg, first and goal at the one, and Jair Brown's able to get him for the first of two times. What did you see from those picks? Was it great defense or just poor offense?
I would say the first one was a combination, the one in the end zone was a combination of a poor read by Young and an excellent play by Brown. Brown was aligned on the edge to the field, which was Young's boot side. Young threw to Evans on the backside crosser at the back of the end zone, but there was no receiver to control Brown, so Brown just read Young and made the interception. I mean, you know, it was just Young was not aware that Brown was there and could react because no receiver controlled him. And then Young threw it, probably thinking that Brown would not be a factor on the throw. And he was. It was a really good play. And the second one was in the fourth quarter. And I thought that was a really good play by Brown. You know, he showed excellent recognition and reaction. McMillan ran the dig from the boundary. Brown read the route and Young. He planted. He drove on the throw. It was just a really good play. He read it, you know. And, you know, I feel like watching the tape that Brown and Mustafa are kind of settling in to being a pretty good safety tandem. It's clear that they feel those are the two best safeties. They obviously play what we call big nickel, and Pinnick plays a lot of snaps with them. But really, Brown and Mustafa are the safeties, and I think they're both playing well.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films senior producer, with us here on Willard and Dibbs. Greg, maybe you know, much like what the safeties are doing, it feels like the offensive line is kind of settling in as well. Last 2 weeks, maybe their two best weeks of the season as a whole. I know that they've gotten healthier, which certainly has helped. It also seems like individuals are just playing better than they have at other stages of the season. What did you see from the Niners' offensive line on tape in this game on Monday night? And is that becoming maybe not a strength, but less of a glaring weakness for this Niners team?
Well, I think you're seeing, you know, McCaffrey have runs now where he's getting past the first level of the defense, and that's a big deal because that wasn't happening early in the season. So I think it's coming together a little bit. I guess since Barch came back week 10, they've been rotating Barch and Burford. They each played the same number of snaps in this game. Who knows what the next game will be, if it's one or the other, or if they continue to do that. I think Pooney, who struggled, I thought he struggled through a good part of the first half of the season in his second year. You know, sometimes that happens. I think he's settling down a little bit, not where I'm sure they'd like him to be, but better than he was early in the season. You know, I thought, like, for instance, the McCaffrey touchdown run, which was just really sweet. Oh. I mean, that was That's one of the reasons I kind of love watching tape. When you see a play like that, that play was so well executed. I mean, it was an ISO lead toss into the boundary. Bartsch made the really difficult block. He had the front side reach block on the three technique. Wharton, that's a really, really hard block. And he made it really well. And then, of course, you had Brendel and Williams showing outstanding mobility and body control, working to the second level. And, of course, it was Juszczyk who, kicked out the corner. But that was just one of those really pretty plays to watch. And then I think on the next series, McCaffrey had the 17-yarder. So the longer runs, again, I'm not going to sit here and say he's going to have a 35-yard run this week. It's a really hard defense to play against. But I think the run game is starting to just generate a little more sustainability to it. And you just got to love McCaffrey. The guy is just so physically tough, competitive. I mean, he's just a fun guy to watch.
Yeah, and still with a chip on his shoulder at this late date. And I'm glad you broke down that play because Grandy and I were talking about it before. 22 personnel, and Kittle comes yep. all the way across the field from outside the numbers just to get a piece of somebody at the tail yep. end of that. Even though the play didn't go to his side, the strong side where the two tight ends were.
Yeah, no, it's and that's the key thing. I mean, even there was it's funny you mentioned that because on the 17-yarder on the which started this series right after that. You probably saw this. Pearsall had a great block on the safety Scott. I mean, that's sort of the way, Kyle. I mean, if you're going to play for Kyle with the run game, your receivers, it's not a matter of pancaking people. That doesn't happen in the league, but you've got a block. And that was the first thing I noticed on that 17-yarder, the way Pearsall came in from the outside and really, he laid the wood on the safety Scott, the filling safety, and that allowed McCaffrey to have a 17-yard run instead of a 5-yard run.
Greg, you brought up Ricky Pearsall, who, much like Purdy, has played two games since coming back from a relatively long absence, hasn't done a whole lot in terms of catches and yards, 3 catches for 6 yards in those two games. I know you're a big fan of his, and you talk about his shiftiness and his route-running ability. Have you seen on tape those things still show up, and is it just as simple as him not getting the ball, or what are you seeing from him?
Randy, we've discussed this a lot, and I don't know if you've heard me discuss this. This is not an offense that focuses on a receiver. So, what's happened in these two games to me doesn't mean anything. It's not like, oh, my God, what's wrong with Ricky Pearsall? They don't worry. They don't go into a game with the idea that we better get the ball to Ricky Pearsall now. He's played two games, and, boy, he hasn't had a ton of targets. That's not the way they play offense. Don't forget, Pearsall was actually wide open on that interception he threw in the end zone, and he didn't go to him, to my way of thinking, with the proper timing. If he went to him with the proper timing, it would have been a touchdown, and my guess is you probably wouldn't have asked me the question, but because they don't really play like that. They're not going to come out this week and say, we're playing Cleveland. We better throw it to Ricky Pearsall, So he'll get his plays. It'll show up. And just like Kittle he's almost week to week too as a receiver. You never know if he's going to be, if he's going to get 8 targets or he's going to get 2 targets. It's just the way games play out.
And you talk about this weekend. It's a tough spot. It's a morning game. Yep. It's the 13th game in 13 weeks. What do they do to try to slow down 95 Myles Garrett? Because, Greg, as you know, this guy is a game wrecker. So when you look at the film, what do teams do that works? Have you seen anything work against this guy this year?
Well, I think you probably tell him it's a late game and not an early game. I hope that he shows up later.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This guy is ridiculous. He's got 18 sacks. And he's on pace for 28 sacks, which, again, is ridiculous. This is going to be a really interesting thing to see how Kyle deals with this. Because McKivitz, normally Garrett lines up on the left side of the defense, the right side of the offense. Not 100%, but normally. And McKivitz has always struggled in one-on-one pass protection. So this is going to be a game where Kyle's going to know this. This is not going to be a big surprise, by the way. So there's going to be a lot going on here with motions, with formations, with misdirections. There's going to be a lot going on that deal with Garrett. Now, obviously, if you get into too many third and nines, then you got to decide, are you keeping Juszczyk in? If you go 3 wide and Juszczyk's not on the field, do you have to keep your tight end in? You certainly don't want to keep Kittle in, but it might be a game where you have to. So it could be a game where Kittle is not a highly targeted receiver. And again, I'm just throwing out options. I'm not saying this will or won't happen because none of us know. But the point is, if you start getting into those long yardage situations, too many of them, you can't let McKivitz block him one-on-one, unless you're going to have a three-step drop throw. You know, unless it's going to be one of those quick climbing throws and the ball's out. But if it's long yardage and you need a deeper drop, you're going to have to do something to make sure it's not a pure one-on-one matchup.
Yeah, Greg, Myles Garrett obviously seems to be like a lock at this stage for Defensive Player of the Year. So he's obviously an amazing trump card to have on a defense. But you were talking about the defense as a whole, and Jim Schwartz historically has gotten over on Kyle Shanahan. What does the defense as a whole do that makes it tough? Not just Myles Garrett. He obviously, of course, is a big part of it. But what about the defense as a whole?
Well, the main thing that I've always noticed, and Jim Schwartz was in Philly for a number of years, and I did get a chance to talk to him a couple of times, he is so good at disguise and rotation on the back end. So what you see pre-snap is not what you necessarily get post-snap, but it's subtle. He's not one of those guys that like runs people out, you know, where it's obvious that, oh, this guy, he started here, but now he's going to be all the way over there. It's very, very subtle. Like sometimes the distinction between his cover two and cover three is so hard to figure out, even watching tape. Imagine trying to figure that out when you have, you know, 2.5 seconds at most to throw the ball and you're taking your drop. So it just, there's so many subtle little variations in his coverage with his rotations that it's difficult to figure, and it's hard to play against. And like I said, I've had coaches tell me that he's one of the toughest defensive coordinators to play against. This is not an easy game. I mean, obviously all the talk's going to be about Shedeur Sanders, and his game was, you know, was, they didn't even ask him to do very much. He made one phenomenal throw, which was truly phenomenal, but they didn't ask him to do much at all. But that's going to be the talk with this game. But really, the 49ers offense, Browns defense, is the much more interesting tactical element to this game.
I couldn't agree with you more, but now that you brought it up, I want to know what you've seen from Shedeur, not only in his game plus as a pro, but I know you crunch a lot of college tape.
Yeah.
What does he do well, and what does he struggle with that maybe the Niners can take advantage of?
Well, you know, one of the things I think he has to get better at is he's a little slow twitch in his drop. And you know, it, a lot of guys, when they get to the NFL from college, because the college game is so different. And, you know, he always was a guy that stayed in the pocket a little too long. He didn't see it as quickly as you wanted him to. But it was hard. It's been hard to get a read, to be honest, with what he's done, even in this start. They had, you know, some third and longs, and they threw screens. One of them went for a 66-yard touchdown, which gave him big numbers. I understand why he threw the interception he did. We're not going to break that down, but I totally understand why he threw it. And he did make the one unbelievable play where the Raiders went cover zero, forced him out of the pocket because there was a free hitter at him, and he made a phenomenal throw to Isaiah Bond. The ball went 60 yards in the air. He put it right on the money. It was a phenomenal play. But they didn't really, you know, it was a game where they were in control, and they didn't really ask him to make difficult throws or to have to stay in the pocket for a long time. So hopefully, if you're a Niners fan, this game plays out differently and they have to have more dropbacks. He only had 22 in the game this past week. Hopefully you can get to the point where he's got to drop back 30, 35 times, and you can force him to have to go through progressions and see things. And, you know, we'll see how the game plays out.
Greg, Thanksgiving tomorrow, three good NFL games, Packers, Lions, Chiefs, Cowboys, Bengals, Ravens. What does Thanksgiving look like for Greg Cosell? You just planted on the couch watching football all day, or what do you got on the schedule tomorrow?
Well, I'll be in the office probably for about 6 hours in the morning, because there's still games I got to see from this past week. And then we go to my brother-in-law's, and, you know, he best have the early game on, because we're going around 1:30, I think. So Thanksgiving for me normally is a day where I can't just sit and like watch the games, you know, because it's a family day. So yeah, they're on, but I just can't sit there and be separate from everybody else and watch the games. You know, it's hard to do that.
What's the scouting report on the brother-in-law's turkey? Overly dry, undercooked, stuffing is not great.
It's the first year we're doing this. We've normally done something else, which was like a big, big family event, but people are spread out a little bit more this year. So this will be the first time. So I don't know. I don't know what the game plan is. I don't know if I have to call an audible. I don't know.
I love it. I hope that you can script your first 15 bites. And I also hope that you have a full analysis of the meal for us for next week.
Oh, but you know, I try not to overeat during the week, but Thanksgiving is one of those days where, you don't go into Thanksgiving thinking I'm going to be eating kale and granola. It's just not one of those days,
Exactly.
This is when you take advantage.
That's
absolutely
right. That's
great. Well, happy Thanksgiving. We appreciate your time as always. Have a great holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
all
Greg. Right.
Thanks, Greg. That's Greg Cosell of NFL Films with us here on Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original. Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.